And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, after a really beautiful few days here in Illinois, we finally got some rain, and the rain has moved in. And so we needed that for our crops and everything else, so we'll see what happens. I still need some tomatoes. I got peaches and everything going, but without rain, we don't do a whole lot.
Well, Doug, you can come to Colorado.
Yeah, Denise, you got a lot more water than you need out there, don't you?
Yeah, it's epic biblical flooding in Colorado with a lot of road damage, and Lyons, Colorado is completely blocked off. They've been helicopter bringing people out. I mean, these are whole populations of cities. I mean, Lyons is like an island now.
You're safe. You're down. You're not too far from what used to be Stapleton, Denver International Airport, right?
Right.
So you're slow. You're in a safe area anyway.
Yeah, we're a safer area, although the creek, I guess about 9 blocks from us is over its banks. Of course, all of the creeks will be above their banks, you know, coming south. And I know I got a picture from Colorado Springs from Fort Carson with showing one of the bridges down there, and the water's way, way high. So, and it hasn't stopped raining yet. We keep getting rain. It's not raining right now where I'm at, but I was over in Aurora yesterday for a women's veterans conference for Colorado, and as we came out, it was like the sky opened up and just flooded everything again. So it's been an interesting, like, over a week now of rain, and it's terrible damage up north of us in Greeley, Estes Park, Lyons, just...
Boulder's not that far from your house, is it?
And it's taken out... No, it's not. It's on the east side of Denver. But it's taken out roads, and it's not just chunks of the road missing. It's, you know, the whole undersurface that the road was built on. So it's massive federal emergency time and, you know, federal funding, and it won't be over for those people for a long time.
That's pretty bad. Well, speaking of...
I did want to mention one thing, Doug, before we get started with the guest. We have confirmation that the Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Illness Research is going to meet in D.C. on October 28th and 29th. And Gulf War veterans, their families, we need you to come. If there's any way possible, we need you to come. What has happened is they are moving forward. We don't know which 6 members of the committee have been removed. We don't have their names yet, but they are being removed as of this meeting. And so I guess there'll be replacements who we don't know who they are. We had 3 vets on the panel, and of course Marguerite Knox, our nurse, has been involved since the Presidential Advisory Committee is off, because she resigned out of total frustration. She resigned twice. This was it for her. Anthony Hardy, a very strong, dedicated, you know, person, Gulf War vet, resigned in protest. So we have Joel Graves left as a veteran. I don't know who else is going to be off the panel or who's going to be on, but the VA secretary is moving forward. The House and Senate did not step up to do anything to stop this, to protect our RAC and the independence of the RAC. So I'm very upset about it, and like I said, we're putting the word out widely. Veterans, if you can get there, we need to stand up for sure now. And if you can't get there, you can, you know, write out a 2-page or maybe just a little bit longer input into the RAC as your personal statement. Remember, this is about research, not about care or claims. This is mainly about our research coming forward and going forward to try to find us a treatment. They removed any reference about treatment and treatment trials. I am very deeply concerned. I will be there. And I encourage every vet that can to get up there. In the past, we may have had 5-6 vets show up. That's, you know, come on, guys. This is about our future health if they get treatment trials going, and this has got to stop. The other thing that's going on is we do have a good research project, and I guess it was funded by VA, but and I've mentioned this to you, Doug, but Minneapolis-St. Paul, at the VA, and if you fly in there, There's a light rail that will go from the airport to the VA hospital, the front door. Cost about 70 cents if you're senior or just able each way to ride it. And you go in, it'll take about 3 hours maybe just a little longer. They have some consent forms for you to sign. They have some surveys. And then they do the MEG procedure. Now, the MEG machine they have is involved in actually mapping the damage to the brain. This is the one and only MEG machine, magnetic encephalograph of the brain, that is in the VA system. There is only total maybe 20 of those in the nation, although they're spread out. So there's potential here if they prove that the MEG machine is appropriate. And so far it looks very promising. It takes maybe 17 minutes, no dye injection, nothing like that. And they are able to show where the different parts of the brain are involved. And there's a different segment for post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a different part of the brain involved with traumatic brain injury, a different part of the brain with gut flora illness. They have used these machines to look at Alzheimer's, epilepsy, other conditions. So this is a move forward, and I'm going to put the phone number out that you can call to talk to them and get involved. They don't have travel funds, but I'm working on a possible way that we can get funding if people really need it to cover their travel, and I'll hopefully have some more details on that. But they do pay you for the time you spend. I'll know in a number of weeks here what I put out on my airfare versus what they, provide to me, offsetting it. But the phone number to the people at the Minneapolis VA for the Gulf War veterans to get involved with the MEG research is 612-467-3033.
Repeat that.
612-467-3033. Now, if anybody wants to know more about it, they can email me at dsnurse1@yahoo.com. I can provide you links to where they present it to the RAC, and other links about, the MEG machine itself. So I really want to encourage that. Please try to participate in this study. It's important to get as many vets as we can. Now, they had good cooperation with the VA in Minneapolis, Wisconsin, Iowa. I think they hit North Dakota and South Dakota. And what they did is they wanted access to the VA records, since they are VA, and they went through those that had signed up for the registry. And they started aggressively calling all these vets and trying to welcome them in to come participate. So they've got it's a pretty good number so far. It's more than Dr. Haley had done with his study with the arterial stem technique. It is more than what was done with Veronica's study with the fMRI DT technology. So this, I cannot recommend it higher. The people that are doing it are experts. I mean, there's only 20 machines in the country, and I call him Dr. G now because it's a Greek name and I can't get it all out. But he is one of the experts in the field. And like I said, this is the only machine, MEG machine, in the VA system. So please, veterans, let me tell you the phone number again. And toward the end of the program, I'll get the other alternate number that goes actually to the study recruiter. 612-467-3033. So I can't recommend it higher. We need these studies done. Vets, this will make a difference to us as we move forward, whether it's DOD or VA-funded studies. I try to keep attuned to all the research, whether it's private, civilian, what have you. And I have been impressed since they first presented at the RAC, and I was delighted to get the opportunity to be there. And no, until the research is finished, we won't know what it's showing. But the preliminary stuff that they're showing encourages me that maybe very near in the future that we'll have a documented study that we can then get any EGFR vets to have that ordered and gotten done so that we have more data and maybe to help our claims and our care.
That's pretty important. Well, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, the Progressive Radio Network and Warrior Connection, we're talking about education, information, and moving forward. Well, we're going to take a step back into the past and also at the same time in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a distinct honor to have a Vietnam-era combat medic, Jerry Wiese. Jerry, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Hey, thanks, Doug.
Well, Jerry and I have had an incredible week, and both of us have been very busy all week long because, as we talked on this radio before, Jerry and I were just totally involved at Chanute Air Museum with the Red Tail Project, and this is a Tuskegee Airmen project, and at the airfield, and Jerry and I were both there helping all week long. Jerry was really busy, too. We had like 1,400 kids that came through and hundreds of more families over the last 2 days. But we actually had a T-6, a P-40, and a P-51, all three aircraft sitting at the same location at the same time, all flying aircraft.
And there was also a C-45 Beechcraft, too. Remember that one?
Yeah, those other two aircraft. We had more, and then we had a brand new medevac helicopter came in.
Yeah.
It was pretty astonishing. And then this afternoon, I don't know if Jerry was got out there. We were also busy, but we actually had four of the original Tuskegee Airmen were there today, and so I got to meet all of them this afternoon. But
wow.
The neat thing about the Tuskegee Airmen and what we all learned and what we were involved in teaching, and this goes back to what we've all been involved in, the mottos and the thing from the Red Tails and the Tuskegee Airmen are to aim high, believe in yourself, use your brain, never quit, be ready to go, and expect to win. And it's incredible to meet people that made a change in world history, a change in military history. I mean, just literally changed everything. And today when you were sitting there and I was sitting there in the midst of these, four Tuskegee Airmen, I mean, it's just absolutely a mind-boggling event. And, Jerry, as you saw, the kids were just delighted and lit flying high, weren't they?
Well, you know, I took my granddaughter, and she was just, she's 8 years old, and she really, really enjoyed it. All the kids seemed to really enjoy it. And of course, Doug, the weather was fantastic for an event like this outside. You couldn't ask for a better day to go flying. And they did have a flying P-51C Mustang, and that was just fantastic to watch that kind of, you know, there's lots of P-51s out there, but not very many Razorback P-51C Mustangs.
For myself
personally, that was a rare treat to watch that thing taxi by, and the sound of that Rolls-Royce engine, it was just music to my ears, you know.
Yeah, well, Jerry, you've got to go back a long way. We got multiple things to do. It. I mean, you also sit on the committee for the Regional Veterans Memorial we built at the old Chanute Air Force Base, so you're totally involved in that. You just had two incredible weekends raising money to build this Veterans Memorial, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got an authentic 1944 Willys MB Jeep that is documented through photographic evidence to have served in the Battle of the Bulge. And that's a unique piece of equipment. And I took it to the local drive-in. There's not many drive-ins left in this country, but this particular drive-in was having, it's got two screens, and they were having a double feature on both screens. And the owner of the drive-in allowed me to bring the Jeep up, and I parked it just outside of the ticket booth, where people had to go by me after they got their tickets and politely ask them if they would care to make a donation to the memorial. And we collected around $750 altogether, which was quite a bit of money, really, when you think about it. But it was because of the Jeep. The Jeep was there, and I was there, and the people were willing to give, you know, for a good cause. So we had a good time. And I enjoy doing this. I do.
Pretty fascinating. Again, a part of the committee was collecting money at the Red Tails event, and there's all different things. But many, many years ago, and, well, Denise, I don't know if you're aware, Denise, she's an old Air Force flight nurse and everything else. She's been involved in Vietnam through Desert Storm and beyond, as you just heard. She's still totally actively involved. I was a bomb nav hard hat during the Vietnam era, ended up as a combat medic and having fun with that before we moved on. What was it like, Jerry, to be a frontline combat medic during the Vietnam War? Where were you at in Vietnam, and what were you involved in?
Well, I came through Vietnam through Cam Ranh Bay, as a lot of people did. That was my first taste of Vietnam. And I was there at Cam Ranh Bay for a couple of days at what they called the replacement center. And after a couple of days, they sent me a little further up north to Chu Lai. And I believe Chu Lai, if you look on the map, I want to say Chu Lai is about halfway between DMZ and Cam Ranh Bay. It was right on the South China Sea. And after I got to Chu Lai, I was assigned to headquarters and headquarters command of the 23rd AmeriCal Division. Then they took me from there, after a few days at Chu Lai, they took me to a place called Duc Pho. And I spent 2 weeks at an aid station, a battalion aid station at Duc Pho. And the whole thing there was they wanted me to see some battle casualties there at the battalion aid station before they transferred me to the field, to the platoon of the men that I would eventually end up with. At this point, I was 18 years old. I went to Vietnam directly after MOS school, medic school. I hadn't even changed a Band-Aid, and I was going into combat. So I spent 2 weeks at the aid station, and while I was there at the aid station, I found out that I was going to Charlie Company of the 4th Battalion, 21st Infantry, the 11th Light Infantry Brigade. And that didn't mean anything to me, but it did mean something to the people that were stationed at Duc Pho. Because as the people at Duc Pho, the platoon sergeants and the people that were actually there at the aid station asked me, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to Charlie Company. And they started saying things like, well, it was nice knowing you. and sorry to hear that. And I started putting two and two together and realized that Charlie Company was a very active platoon. As a matter of fact, there was something about Cali. We were really close to being in his unit. Of course, not when Cali was there. I was there. I actually arrived in Vietnam December 17, 1970, and left in 1971. But I think Cali was in the 3rd platoon or 3rd battalion or something like that, but the address was very close to Lieutenant Cali's. When I got to my platoon, I got to be honest with you, I went out there, and when I saw the people in my platoon for the very first time, I thought I was with a bunch of pirates. They didn't look like the troops I had trained with. They were very hippie eyes or whatever. They had bracelets made out of bootlaces. They cut their sleeves off their shirts. One of them had a pair of tennis shoes on instead of jungle boots, which I thought was kind of silly. You know, they kind of were doing their own thing. And, of course, they hadn't shaved for a few weeks. They were out in the boonies, and the water that they carried on their back wasn't for cleaning up and shaving. It was for drinking. So I thought I was with a bunch of pirates. And it took me a while to get accustomed to them. But once I got accustomed to them and became part of them, they became a very close family to me. And I've always told people that if you want to know what being a medic is about, it's, you know, I'm actually lectured at a couple of high schools, and you go in these high schools for these gifted students or accelerated students, and you look at them, and they're not throwing spitballs, they're listening to what you say. And I've never gone in there and talked to the kids about the domino effect. Politically, I don't know much about the Vietnam War. You know, yeah, I think we were trying to stop communism, but that's not my part of the war. I didn't get into that. I wasn't privy to the information. And the only thing I can say is, as a combat medic, I took it that these were my family. This was my extended family while I was there. And I took it very personal when the enemy tried to kill someone in my family. And when I lecture at the high school, I always ask the kids in the class to look around at the kids sitting beside them and in front of them, behind them. They might have known these kids since kindergarten. But I ask them always, would you jump on a grenade for the kid beside you? And most of them say, well, no. I said, well, what if it was your brother or your mother or your father? Would you do it then? Well, yeah, probably would. Well, that's the way combat is. It makes you into a family. that band of brothers thing, I guess. But I was very close to my platoon. I stayed with them 24 hours a day. I was only attached to Charlie Company. So when we came off our missions, and our missions would last 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes even a little bit longer, occasionally I was separated from my platoon. Not often, but occasionally I was separated, and I had to go into villages and do mid-cap services kind of stuff. But for the most part, we came back out of the field, and we pulled bunker guard around the perimeter of fire bases like San Juan Hill for 3 days, and then we get resupplied and go back out and start it all over again. But my war, my personal war, and I've always told people this, there was blood and guts and shooting and that kind of stuff. There's no doubt about that. But my personal war was a war in the country. I found that the country itself was very hostile. It appeared to me that every plant that you came in contact with either had thorns that would rip at your skin, or was poisonous and would make you itch, and every bug would leave a welt on you. So it was a very hostile environment. And of course, we weren't shaving and weren't cleaning up on a daily basis. If we were lucky, we'd come across a stream once during a mission and maybe take a bath in a cold stream. So I can distinctly remember the sweat, the salt in my sweat, stinging my eyes, constantly just stinging my eyes, and the grit in my teeth, and my hair matted to my head, you know, just because of the dirt and the sweat. But I survived, and I came home. But that's my best description of Vietnam, just a hot, sticky, sweltering place with occasional combat that would just put, you know, tear into your spine. I've never talked much about blood and guts. I almost refuse to do that, Doug. When I talk to these kids in school, occasionally somebody will ask me about body counts and this and that, and that's not really what I'm about. I'll be happy to tell anybody what Vietnam was like, but I don't go into the war stories. I will tell you, and I think I've mentioned to you once before, we did lose 8 guys in one day, so I did see my fair share of combat. I'm also very fortunate in that when I came back from Vietnam, I came back with all 10 fingers and toes and my eyes and my ears. I was never, ever injured in Vietnam. Excuse me. And I'm thankful for that as well. Just the other day, I was at the museum working, Doug, as a volunteer, as you all know I do, and someone came in to me, a lady and a man, and she asked me when I was in Vietnam, and I told her, and she said, well, the war was about over then. And I said, you know, a lot of people think that that war was over in the early 70s. But to me and the people in my platoon and the people that died and whose names are in that wall, that war wasn't over until the last soldier got on the UE and left. So it's a little misconception of people that that war was winding down. So our activity was winding down as well, and it was not. Now, did that kind of answer your question, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, you were 18 when you went over there, and you had to learn emergency medicine and all this so rapidly. I mean, you're taking care of the troops. Denise, you were a flight nurse, and the troops were coming back, being brought back from Vietnam, and you were taking care of them at Wolford Hall Hospital, correct?
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I am an era vet, but and plus, when I, you know, before I went into the military, my nurse's training involved, I was in Houston, Texas Women's University, and that's why I chose that university, so I could be at the Houston Medical Center. And we had, you know, rotations to the VA hospital. So definitely, as I was going through my nurse's training, definitely we're dealing with veterans of the war even then. And then I actually, you know, began working on my master's before I was even finished with the bachelor's, taking a lot of correspondence courses on top of a normal load so I could finish my bachelor's faster on some of the core curriculum items. And so then I got a, you know, appointment through Air Force Institute of Technology to finish up that master's and then reported into Wolford Hall. So, yeah, I was there seeing the veterans come in with all the horrible wounds. It was an experience I'll never forget, being a nursing student at the VA hospital, the old one in VA hospital, Houston, off of old Santa Fe Road, I think it was. The new one's quite modern and beautiful, but we still had the wards with all the beds in them for most of the hospital. You know, so it was not, you know, the modern-day hospital or a modern-day VA now. You know, I was young then, but some of them were even younger than I was, you know, having served, you know, if they went in at 18 or wanted to go and got their parents to sign off, extremely young men with their lives changed forever. And so that impacted me greatly, and that and having family members that had served in the military from World War II and even back in Antietam battlefield. I've tracked back one of my great-great-grandfathers back there now, and I had uncles that served in World War II, and then had cousins that served, you know, after that. And my brothers. I had my brother, Vietnam vet, Air Force, that ended up at Tonsonute during TET 68. So, and the other brother was Marine. So, you know, it touches your life when you've got military members in your family, and I wanted to do my part. In fact, one of my aunts was a female pilot, WAC, and, you know, did transporting planes and all. So she was one of my favorite aunts and imprinted on my mind. And so, you know, I followed some type of small tradition there to go in and do my part. And I always considered that battlefield nursing and the amazing medical history from war of the advances in medical science. I mean, the helicopters used in Vietnam. We've got air flight in almost all the, you know, cities in the U.S. now, and it saves lives because you get them to the hospital in a faster time period. Controlling hemorrhage, understanding gunshot wounds, all that's been from military medical history from way back when. And I realized that, and I, you know, wanted to be on the cutting edge, I guess. And so I joined up, and it was good and bad mixture. I mean, looking at the Gulf War, I feel like our medical history is not good in that area. And Agent Orange with the same thing with Vietnam.
Yeah, let's fit in. Jerry, you've been affected by Agent Orange. I know you were affected by Agent Orange as a consequence of Vietnam, and then you recently found out that you were affected by Agent Orange at Chinook Air Force Base when the individual that sprayed it walked up and told you that it happened. How do you think the Vietnam vet looks at it today with the health effects of Agent Orange?
Well, I think a lot of Vietnam veterans, Doug, find that the VA is nothing but a bunch of red tape, and that they really, truthfully, don't want to help the veterans. That may not be necessarily true, but I've talked to a lot of veterans that have given up trying to receive any kind of benefits at all for Agent Orange. It was myself personally. It was hard for me to come to grips with Agent Orange that I was even affected by it. I had prostate cancer, and prostate cancer is it's my understanding that that's one of the main side effects of Agent Orange. You know, and people do get prostate cancer that don't go to Vietnam. But when I got prostate cancer and went through my radiation treatment, it was only then that I started to think about Agent Orange as a possible cause for this. I filed for my benefits almost 2 years ago online. I know a lot of guys go to the trouble of getting representation, be that attorneys or doctors or whatever, and I didn't want to go through that at all. I just kind of wanted to see if I could do this on my own. So I filed for my benefits online. It took me several hours in front of the computer to do this. They asked me a lot of questions online, which I didn't think were even pertinent to what I was doing. They want to know what my wife's ex-husband's address was and questions like this. And I thought, I don't know what this has got to do with me, but I answered these questions as honestly as I could. And it did seem to me that every page, every time you went to another screen, another page, there was a threatening notification that if you falsify any of this information, you can go to prison and be fined $250,000. There was all this incentive to be honest. And I did. And they immediately gave me a file number or a case number. And then I waited. And I waited. And I waited almost a year to the day. And I had not heard a word from the VA. And I was getting kind of upset about this because I thought after a year, I do realize there's a backlog, but after a year, I wondered how many veterans are actually dying waiting for them just to open the door and say, let's listen to what you got to say. And they finally contacted me and said they had some information that they wanted me to sign, some documentation, doctor release forms about my cancer. And I did that. And then 6 months went by again. And then they contacted me and said that they wanted me to come into the Danville, Illinois VA Center for a C&P examination. And I really didn't even know what this was about. So my wife and I went into the VA Center at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I do distinctly remember telling my wife that right now my battle is probably going to really start. It's where I have to deal with all the complications of trying to get benefits for Agent Orange. I walked in the front door of the VA hospital. I can actually say that I was shocked that they were extremely polite and very helpful and acted like they really did want to help me. And the few times I've been there, I've complimented them on their politeness and promptness. I mean, it's not what I expected the VA to be. I know there's probably some hospitals that are the nightmares that you hear about, but the one in Danville, Illinois is really a good hospital. But I got in to see a woman, and she took my wife and I back into her office and sat down, and I looked around this office and I didn't see an examination table. I didn't see any kind of, blood pressure cup. I didn't see anything that looked like I was going to get undressed and get an examination. And all she did was ask me some questions about my prostate cancer. And she stopped and she said, okay, I've got enough information. She said, Mr. Weese, you're going to receive 100% compensation. And it shocked me that it went that smoothly for me. And since that time, I've been receiving my benefits. And because I'm 100% service-connected with Agent Orange Disability, a lot of my prescriptions are filled free. And also I get free dental care and eye care and that. So it was a big benefit for me, and I would certainly encourage anybody who thinks or is affected by Agent Orange, even if you're 70 years old, to go on the website for the Veterans Administration and take the time to do this and be patient. You know, I know a certain percentage of people, once they file, probably do die before they get to the stage I was at. But I think in the long run, if you're just patient, it probably will pay off for you. And by the way, Doug, I'm in contact with almost everyone in my platoon. And for the most part, almost everyone in my platoon has been affected by Agent Orange in one way or another. So it's affected an awful lot of us Vietnam veterans, and we didn't even know it. For myself personally, as a combat medic with the infantry, we filled our canteens up in the streams. And you really don't know what's going on upstream. You know, you could have a herd of water buffalo walking across the stream and you didn't really know, or the local people washing their clothes. We just filled our canteens up, and we seldom have ever purified our water. And as dumb as that may sound right now, our logic at the time, and please don't laugh, but it made our coffee taste funny. So we didn't purify our water over there. And then, of course, we slept on the ground. And it's hard to say what was absorbed in the ground, but that's how we would have been affected by it, just by being directly in the way, in the line of the stuff as it flowed downstream.
I think that the Vietnam era vets did not have the benefit of the internet.
No, we did.
And so we are making headway that has not been seen before, and I want to encourage every Vietnam vet out there, every vet, you know, get a means to access the internet. You will learn a lot. You'll see that you have benefits that you may not have known about, and it's important for your family members too. Most of the children from Vietnam have already grown up and maybe served in Gulf War. But so we've made tremendous headway. We have to compliment the Vietnam vets that worked on it. And I remember going up there when I first started going and being yelled at by other Vietnam vets that had been involved in the battle. And they didn't get that bill passed until 91. And, you know, I was being yelled at by Vietnam vets. Says, you've got to get more vets of the Gulf War up here to D.C. Row them in, wheel them in stretchers, whatever you have to do, Denise. And I have consistently put the word out there of when we have hearings, meetings, IOM, be it the Research Advisory Committee, be it the other committee that we have for 18 months. I mean, the Osagui town meetings, we were spreading the word. And as more and more of our veterans get online, Facebook has become very active. David Wynette's site on Gulf War Illness has over 3,000 on it now. It's grown tremendously in the last 6 months. So the benefits of the Internet is to get the veterans together, at least online, at least communicating better. And the social media sites have helped. I try to get word out about our research, and it's a fight for us still. I think there's been good education in the VA system about the Agent Orange benefits and additions of presumptions. Now, where we ran into trouble historically is the Agent Orange bill included any animal studies that would link the problem. And, of course, finding the dioxin into the fatty areas of the body helped tremendously. The Gulf War vets, a lot of problems happened. We had a lot of reservists, National Guard called up for Gulf War, Desert Storm. And they really did not keep their records well. They did not do exit physicals. So that, you know, the records got lost coming back from theater. It's a nightmare on the record maintenance. And there was regs broken on that. There was never a full investigation on what happened to all of our records. And, you know, having records, if you were seen in theater documenting a problem, well, you know, we weren't wimps. And people don't go to, you know, from our situation, we were flight nurses and med techs. And to get them to the hospital, we had to get them in a truck and 880 and run them up to the hospital. And then the records didn't get sent back into their files. Now, I made sure for my small group of people that we were up at Log Base Charlie that they did, but they did not give any exit physicals when we came off active duty back into the reserves, and that has hurt us significantly. The other thing that hurts is that if you're in the military and had active duty and reserve time and wanted to finish out your time, and this bites us in the ass, put it that way, but you don't acknowledge your problems when you have your physical, if you're, you know, within the zone to get your 20, unless you're dying, you're not going to acknowledge your problems. And so there's no record, even on our normal annual physical for flight nurses, med techs, pilots, you know, because they wanted to keep flying. They wanted to, you know, get their 20 in. They wanted to continue on as much as they could. So that is really, I think, hurt the National Guard and the reserve. I'm hearing more and more problems with the National Guard of where are their medical records. It's even worse for them, I think. The training and education in the VA system for Agent Orange, I think it's an accepted thing now. You know, 91 that the bill came through. And so I think it was a better transition. They accepted the animal studies, which they're not accepting for the proof for Gulf War. And so from our battle, we've had many factors against us and a lack of acknowledgement of this happened and this is real, even though the RAC committee, the first report they put out in 04 with Ross Perot standing there with the Secretary of the VA at the time, you know, got the point across. It was not stress. And it seems like we go backwards. And the RAC committee and the attack on the RAC committee going right now has me deeply concerned, even depressed.
Yeah, Denise, you know, I mean, we need to understand this. I mean, you, your brothers were affected by Agent Orange. There's no doubt about that, correct?
I believe so. Plus, my brother, the Marine that died, served at Lejeune during the time. He, you know, was probably the strongest one of all three of us. He played high school football, was written up in Texas Football Monthly then. You know, very strong person all through his life, and he got an aggressive cancer that took him down within the year. And I'm still trying to work on the family to at least get him on the registry. It probably won't do anything for benefits for him. I mean, he's dead now, and the family. And he did okay, but as far as getting him on the registry, I think it helps overall to have all that recorded. And the military has not done a good job of tracking for the contaminated bases. The other brother that served in Vietnam with the Air Force, he never applied for benefits. He served a full career and more in the military. Then he went into defense contracting. So he probably was at a lot of the bases that I haven't checked the contaminated bases and paralleled it with his, you know, history in the military. But I know once he went into defense contract work, definitely, you know, had some exposures out at Vandenberg when they were setting up the missile defense program. So, you know, there's a lot of Vietnam vets that have a sense of guilt for going in and applying for their benefits. I mean, I have a lot of contacts with pilots and FAA people, and I've constantly said, you served, didn't you? And they tell me, and I go, get into the VA, you know, get on record. And everyone I know of that I've sent to the VA as Vietnam vets have really been streamlined through. And considering the backlog, and the backlog has caused a problem for all.
Yeah. You know, one thing, and Jerry, I mean, you and I have talked, and Denise, all of us were kind of talking tonight. I mean, for Denise and I, Agent Orange is a very specific thing because both of us personally know and work with Admiral Elmo Zumwalt. And Denise and I mean, the two of us together, we've testified.
I don't know if we'd say we worked with him, but he was on the oversight board.
Yeah, that we were up there yanking chains on, I guess.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't say we worked for him.
We didn't work
or
for him.
With him. I think we were standing up for the rights of the Gulf War vets, and he really, you know, I hang my head in shame as an officer that more officers have not spoken up. I feel it's a dereliction of duty that so many of them know something's going on and they haven't spoken out for their troops.
Well, Elmo Zumwalt, I mean, even when you and I were yanking their chains back in the end of the 90s, I mean, he had written in 1990 the Zumwalt Report. And again, Jerry, this is one of the reasons that yours came through so easily and other ones want to get the report, but to go back and just read a section on the Agent Orange from the Zumwalt report from 1990, and Elmo Zumwalt, eventually his family did get it out, and we got a hold of it. It's been the Beyond Treason stuff. So Joyce Riley has got it on. Out at another one of our nurses has been able to get it. Linda May, who lives right here in our area, has been able to get this out. But just to read Elmo Zumwalt's own report, and this was from 1990, quote, after reviewing the scientific literature related to the health effects of Vietnam veterans exposed Agent Orange, as well as other studies concerning the health hazards of civilian exposure to dioxin contaminants, I conclude that there is adequate evidence for the Secretary to reasonably conclude that it is at least as likely as not there is a relationship between exposure to Agent Orange and the following health problems: non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, chloroacne, other skin disorders, lip cancer, bone cancer, soft tissue sarcoma, birth defects, skin cancer, pyorrhea, cutanea tardia, other liver disorders, Hodgkin's disease, hemophilic diseases, multiple myelomas, neurological effects. Jerry, you and I know I'm affected. You're affected by it. Both of us are. Denise is affected.
Yeah.
Autoimmune system, diseases and disorders, leukemia, lung cancer, kidney cancer, malignant melanoma, pancreatic cancer, stomach cancer, colon cancer, nasal and pharyngeal esophageal cancers. Here's the prostate cancer, testicular cancer, live cancer, brain cancer, all the psychosociological effects in gastrointestinal diseases. And then he goes on, in summary, I further conclude that the Veterans Advisory Committee on Environmental Hazards has not acted with impartiality in its review and assessment of the scientific evidence related to the association of the adverse health effects and exposure to Agent Orange. So I know just when we had the big confrontation with Elmo Zumwalt at the National Academy of Sciences, Denise and I were testifying with Gulf War illnesses and working on this, we see the same thing happening. And I find it so funny that when we finally got this report, the guy responsible for Agent Orange, out his son definitely died from Agent Orange. I think Elmo did too when he finally died of lung cancer, not too long after we had our hassles with him at the National Academy and with the Presidential Special Oversight Board. But for all this to be known, and now we're seeing again the same health effects, Jerry, as you're well aware, now that we know that Agent Orange was used on Chinook Air Force Base and all the health effects in and around the area were the same thing. The question that I try to figure, Jerry, you and I were combat medics. Denise, you're a combat, frontline combat nurse, and you've been teaching. We've all been teaching. What do we need to go, or where do we need to go with all this? Because the veteran, and we see this on a daily basis, and Jerry and I, you and I experienced this the other, just not even a couple weeks ago in a meeting. But the veteran still has this reluctance to go for care, the reluctance to acknowledge what has happened. Not that we can change anything in the past, but it's that John Wayne and Rambo mentality that sometimes prevent them from going from care or acknowledging the problems, you know, way before, until the problems get totally out of control. I mean, what is this about being a soldier or a warrior?
I think the mentality of a lot of Vietnam veterans is that if you go to the VA and you ask for compensation, you're basically asking for a handout, you know, a freebie. And I had the same emotional thing where I was almost ashamed to tell anyone that I was receiving benefits for Agent Orange, because Doug, you've seen me face to face. I'm not in a wheelchair and I don't have a seeing eye, dog. You know, I do have some issues, but if you just glance at me, I don't appear to be disabled. And I think some of the Vietnam veterans are afraid of being tagged with being a freeloader or taking advantage of the government. And the other thing is, I think they're afraid of all the red tape, as it was for me. I was just deathly afraid of all the hoops and hurdles, and I just knew that I was going to do something wrong and misrepresent myself and go to prison, you know. You know, I think a lot of them are just like, I don't even want to start this because it will never, ever end. And that might be the case, but I don't think it's the case now. I think the Veterans Administration wants to help us, or at least it appears that they do from my perspective. What little dealings I've had with them has been very positive and beneficial to me. And I would encourage anyone, if they suspect that they've been affected by Agent Orange, to at least check with the VA. You know, and I'm 61 years old, and perhaps I should have done this years ago, you know, but for fear of the red tape, I didn't do it. So consequently, it's cost me some money. You know, you don't get compensation for 30 or 40 or 50 years. You get it from the day you file. And I should have certainly filed for benefits when I was 20 some years old and was starting to realize I've been affected by this. So my advice is to do it. Just sit down at the computer. If you've got, like Denise says, if you have internet access in the comfort of your own home, get a cup of coffee and sit down and do it and just let things just fall where they may, you know.
Yeah, when we look at all of this, I mean, Denise, you just got good news on your disability, didn't you?
Yeah, I was shocked. I put it in. Well, my first claim apparently never showed up in the system. I had somebody file it for me that I served with that was a veteran service officer in Pueblo, and I was calling up to the VA headquarters on some of our vets to try to help them, especially if they were about to go homeless or were in financial difficulties, to kind of highlight them and encourage the people up in headquarters, D.C., to make a phone call to them and hear from them directly. didn't want to share anything that the vet had shared with me because I'm not a VSO, but I could highlight that they needed to call this person and check on them and check on the status of their claim and do something if we knew that a claim wasn't being handled correctly. And in the process, a very nice person in the system, you know, was on the phone call when I called her. Actually, you've called us so many times helping other people, and it's great you're doing that, but how about you? Typical nurse, taking care of everybody else.
You've been doing that so long, Denise. I mean, you know, 20 years, you and I have been working together.
Well, to me, it was not about the disability money. You know, we're middle class and surviving, and I worry about the enlisted and the lower-ranking people that were not getting help and were much sicker, and believing in the in what I was trained in triage, even in wartime. You've got to take care of people when they need it, you know, and the situation of the compensation is if they have no other access to health care, they have no money coming in, their family's falling apart, they're going to go homeless or bankruptcy or, you know, many other factors happening, families falling apart because of it, that I felt like, you know, I didn't want to gum up the system. I was surviving. You and I both had a benefactor that felt very definitely that she needed to keep the leaders standing up, and she helped us.
Yeah, you and I are alive today because we had a benefactor, but very few vets do. And
right.
I mean, Bowers Raiders was very lucky to have the benefactors.
So, you know, she pulled up, you know, I gave her my Social Security, and she goes, there's nothing here. And I went, oh, well, isn't that interesting? I'm not going to get upset at my cohort that was over at MedBase America back at KKMC. Because he had gotten sick and had retired, so I don't know. I haven't called him to give him any trouble about it. But, you know, she gave me a phone number to the VARO Denver and wanted me to call a certain person. And I, you know, have a lot going on helping everybody, so I didn't. Next thing I knew, that person called me. And, you know, I said, well, I don't have everything together, and I'll get over to you. Shortly, I'll give you a call and set up an appointment. He continued to talk to me and was, I guess he was a veteran and he wanted to get my date established. So without my knowledge, he filed the claim to set the date at that point. Then I started getting letters of, you know, put in info, and I reached out and found another service officer who was a Gulf vet over in Arapahoe County. Went to him for his help, and he said, oh, we're overloaded with all the OIF, OEF, and we can't work outside of our counties. Sorry, I didn't know until you were coming over. And so he said, I'm going to send you back over to Jefferson County, and the guy over there is a Marine Vietnam vet, and he'll take good care of you, and if you have any problems, he can coordinate with me. And so we worked on the claim then. That service officer, being a Vietnam Marine, he was ready to retire, so he retired. In the middle of everything, and there was a little delay in getting more county veteran service officers over at Jeffco. And so eventually we had the new person, and so I started working with him. And, you know, he said, Denise, you did all the work. You know, I just helped you fill out the forms and be sure you didn't go off somewhere you shouldn't go type thing. And I said, well, you know, I appreciate that help. And, you know, you've been trained in the claims. And he had been elsewhere in the country as a service officer, knew his stuff. And if he had any questions, I know that he was calling over to the Arapahoe County Gulf War vet.
So anyhow, we're running out of time. What happened to these? What did they finally...
Well, I'm awarded full service-connected with the unemployability. They denied a few things that I want to continue to work on, but I'm taken care of.
Yeah. So I think it's one thing that's important to understand, ladies and gentlemen, both Denise and I and Jerry, the same thing. The way the VA calculates the disabilities, it's not a straight percentage. 1 plus 1 equals 2 plus 2 equals 3 plus 4 equals, you know, whatever.
Yeah, if you added up all mine, it'd be 200.
Yeah, I know mine is well over 100, but we finally, you know, we finally at least got some acknowledgement or recognition.
It comes back as 93 for me. And to get that additional percentage, you almost have to come up with another 50% rating or a combination to get you 50 more, you know. And I'm going, this is crazy. But they threw in the unemployability. I didn't have to apply for it. It came back that they were going to do it themselves type thing. So, you know, but yet I still have a lot of Gulf War vets that we talk to every day that are getting turned down for things that they shouldn't be.
Well, that goes, the information, inadequate information in their medical records, misinformation has been withheld from them. We still find vets that the information, you know, the Zumwalt report is withheld from individuals. So the information is out there, but it's a matter of getting the information to the service officer to get it submitted. And as you know with mine, stuff gets submitted and it disappears. Don't ever work with depleted uranium or chem
and
bio.
And one of the things I want to get out there with the Gulf War vets, and we're going to say it over and over again, do not put on your claim Gulf War illness. You go in and you go to the VA.gov site and you look at the benefits for Gulf War. And it's going to point out chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel. You get proof that you have that from your medical doctor, and that's how you work on your claim. And so many times I say, if you can't find a civilian doctor that's aware of chronic fatigue, irritable bowel, a rheumatologist, whoever you need to find that knows that, that can, you know, examine you and find out. Now, a VA is supposed to do that, but that's what I'm finding as a problem is their lack of education to their doctors. And then when it gets over the claims, then it becomes a problem too. So you've got to feel, you've got to claim the right things to be looked at right. You need to realize that if you put money out in a civilian area and find good civilian doctors, they will help you.
Yeah.
They'll fill out the DBQs, which are questionnaires now for each system of the body and condition. You know, ask them to write a letter for you. All that will help, but there's so many that can't afford that, don't have care elsewhere. And so it breaks my heart that I know that there's others out there that are probably much sicker that are getting the rug around. And
well, our time is about out. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, we've talked about Jerry. Thank you. I mean, you were younger than the soldiers you took care of, but basically you were their doc. You were their daddy. You were the one taking care of them. And Denise, you've been a mother hen for as long as I can remember.
Well, that's what they call nurses, mother hens.
Well,
and,
ladies and gentlemen,
Doug, we want to thank Gary Knowles for everything he's done for us with his documentaries, the radio program that we have every week. And without him, a lot wouldn't have happened. We've had a lot of helpers along the way. And the other thing is, I want to give you that phone number again for the Minneapolis VA. And this is probably the first phone number that you should use, which is the screener, 612-467-1460. I will repeat that, 612-467-1460. Her name is Carrie. She will do the initial interview and probably give you more information over the phone and get you involved in the study for the MEG program, Magnetic Encephalography, at VA Minneapolis. Thank you all.
Yeah, we're out of time. Jerry, thank you for joining us. Denise, thank you. God bless America, and let's take care of us. Have a good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.